Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show, headquarters of Militant Moderation, where we live every day by my dear friend Alan's mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, your host today. Please visit our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and our show times. Well, if you were hoping the shutdown was going to end, as a lot of people were, and in fact, you know, a lot of the insiders were buzzing that this was going to happen, it's going to lift now that the election was passed on Tuesday, and they felt like that was enough for the Democrats to say enough, we'll turn the government back on. Now, nope, they are still holding on with the shutdown. And these really disturbing stories are coming out of Washington now that these radical Democrats are just emboldened as hell by doing well in the election on Tuesday, and now they think the sky's the limit. They're going to keep the government shut down forever until they get every single thing they want. They're going to rob you blind, American taxpayer. They're going to squeeze every nickel out of us because they think they have the country under their boot. They think this is all working for them. They're looking at polls that say that the Republicans are blamed more than they are for the shutdown. They're looking at Tuesday's election results, and now they're just full of salt and vinegar, and saying they're going to keep that shutdown going until they get the sun, the moon, the stars, billions of dollars here, billions of dollars there. No end to this in sight. And of course, being that they're opponents in this contest of wills of the Republicans, one does not want to bet too heavily against this working out for them. How did it get this way? And we tackled that question yesterday. But to put it succinctly, the media waged a propaganda campaign like nothing we have seen outside of the Soviet Union, I would say, in the last 30 years, to reassert their power and make sure that everybody in America who is a middle to low information propensity type of person, people who don't live, eat, and breathe the news, who aren't partisan activists, they made sure that all those people really think the Republicans did this, even though the Democrats did it. And, you know, you have to look at a poll that says 50% blame the Republicans, 43% blame the Democrats. I think that's what the number was at the time of the election. And you have to think that some of that 50%, they know perfectly well the Democrats did this. I mean, they're not that dumb. Some people really are completely bamboozled and have no idea what actually happened here. But some of the people who are answering that poll, they know the Democrats did it. It's just that they agree with the reason why. You know, or they support the Democrats for what they're doing. So they're going to tell pollsters, yeah, this is all the Republicans' fault. That, by the way, is the operating principle of every form of what you might broadly call thuggery. If you're going to rob somebody by force, what do? You stick a gun in their face. You say, give me your money. And if they don't and you shoot them, you then say, this is your fault. If you had just given me that money, I wouldn't have hurt you. So the violence is your fault. That's how terrorism works. That's how every form of bullying works, all the way down to schoolyard bullies. You know, watch the way bullies tell us on the campground. Hey, it's your fault I just punched you in the nose. If you had just given me your lunch, that wouldn't have happened. That's how this works. So this is an exercise of pure, I would say, anti-democratic force. This is the negation of democracy and representative government, what the Democrats are doing. They lost the election. They made a bunch of phony promises that they were going to cut back the subsidies. Remember, they were temporary subsidies for the pandemic, you understand. It was an emergency, so we had to spend billions of dollars during the emergency. And every one of those promises was a false con job from the Democrats. And now they say, no, we're going to shut the government down. We're going to squeeze money out of you. And at first, it was really the most fringy of the Democrats. It was the left fringe. It was the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez types that egged this on. Senior leaders like the minority leader Chuck Schumer, they seemed pretty skeptical that this was maybe a bad idea. And it really seemed like it was at first. The first couple of weeks on this were tough for the Democrats. They was not going their way at all. And then the media swooped in to save them. And they started noticing that as the media misreported this whole thing and just kind of forgot, you know, media runs a bunch of reports about the shutdown and they just kind of forget to tell you the Democrats are the ones who did this. They'll just say the government is shut down. And then maybe they'll repeat Democrat talking points. There have been some great analyses at places like the Media Research Center of how this propaganda campaign was waged. And they pointed out that one of the big things the media has done for the past month or so is they constantly repeat Democrat talking points as if they were objective facts when they're not. And they'll just say something like, they'll say the government shut down for 28 days. Democrats say Republicans did this, you know, and then they'll just leave it at that. And they give you this false impression that's true instead of just a talking point from a political party. So, I mean, all of that worked. You know, a lot of people, the shutdown's starting to hurt. You got the SNAP benefits, food stamps getting shut down. You got airport problems. Airports are having problems cutting back services. People are feeling this in a way they weren't at first. It was amazingly low key for this first couple of weeks, especially back when everyone thought it was hurting the Democrats, so they didn't want to talk about it. And now that the Democrats think it's helping them, the stories of pain and agony are everywhere across the country and filling media space, because this is the Democrats' effort to get leverage. They've been pretty brutally honest about that. They're not honest about a whole lot, but the Democrats have actually come right out and said that the shutdown is their leverage to extract demands. And even though they've said it in exactly those words, they still get a lot of support from the public. They feel like this is going their way and they're not paying any price for doing it. And they're going to keep going until they get a payoff. Byron York, who is one of the better political reporters out there, he was doing a Fox News interview yesterday, I think it was, or this morning. And he said the Democrats are filibustering the bill that would reopen the government. And they think the longer they keep it shut, the more they can get. It's pure political leverage. And Byron is exactly right. That's what this has become now. The Democrats took the temperature of the nation. They looked at polling numbers. They looked at their results on Tuesday night in the out-year elections. And they concluded that whatever political price they are paying for doing this is nothing compared to the potential for gain. So they now see no reason to stop. They were trapped on a roller coaster that they didn't know how to get off of. And now, with the past week or so, ever since those elections, their whole attitude has changed. And now they think this is working for them. And they are not going to take that boot off your neck anytime soon until they get paid. And now all eyes turn to the Republicans and wonder, hey, are those guys going to cave? And that usually is the smart way to bet, to be perfectly honest. Now, the Republicans, the problem that they have had throughout this drama is that very few of them are really calling the Democrats on the carpet. And they're not doing it in an organized way. And I can't believe they keep forgetting this as a party. But if you're the Republicans, look at what the media has done, the services they have provided to the Democrats during this debacle. They are not going to do that for you, guys. There's no way you can convince the media to stop being Democrat partisans and start reporting fairly because you're such a bunch of wonderful, upstanding politicians and statesmen. And they're going to be inspired by your example. They are not going to repeat your talking points. And see, that's the part of this media bias that really hit me when I was reading these analyses of how this has all gone over the past month. The media has consistently repeated Democrat talking points in every report they do as if they were facts, and they're not. But they never do that for the Republicans. They never, ever do that for the Republicans. So what the Republicans will do is early in the shutdown, you know, remember that whole controversy about healthcare for illegal aliens? That absolutely is what the Democrats are doing here. There's no question about it whatsoever. They want healthcare for money for illegal aliens, no doubt about it. And the Republicans conclusively proved it. And the Democrats looked really kind of rocked on their heels when they realized they weren't having a lot of success at pushing their talking points. But then the media said, hey, Democrats, we'll take it from here. We're just going to repeat your talking points over and over and over again for you in every single report. And the Republicans sat back and said, well, we dealt with that illegal alien thing. I guess we won that battle. No, you didn't. You won it for like 2 days. And then the media stopped talking about it, never repeated what you said ever again. And you guys over at the GOP in the White House, you never went back out and repeated it either. See, there are ways that if you're a Republican, you can force the media to cover things. You can force them to transmit your message. And if you work really hard at it, you can force them to tell the truth. It's not easy, but it can be done. But the key is repetition. You have to never give up. You can never finish the Friday evening talk show and slap the imaginary dust off your hands and say, well, I guess we've dealt with that problem, because it's never going to work that way. You have to keep banging the drum over and over and over again. And they really didn't. And part of the problem was that President Trump was out of the country during a crucial part of this. He was on his big Asian trip, which I think was very productive. I mean, it was a great trip foreign policy standards. He got a lot done. There's some interesting reports coming out about how Trump is devising this strategy to break China's grip on critical minerals by turning to Central Asia as potential suppliers. And just today, Trump announced that Kazakhstan is going to join the Abraham Accords, which is his big peace initiative for recognizing Israel by Islamic countries. That's a huge accomplishment. And it's part of this big outreach that he's doing to Central Asia. This is fascinating from a strategic standpoint, and it's really encouraging. But, I mean, it doesn't get you anywhere during the shutdown drama, because it's not about the shutdown. There are so many messages the Republicans could be sending right now, and they're not doing it because they thought they won this debate on points 2 weeks ago and they didn't have to do anything else. They were so very, very wrong about that. I'm John Hayward, your host today. We will be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
According to a 2025 annual study by National Student Clearinghouse, more than 43 million people have some college credit but no degree. Devin Andrews, Vice President of Admissions and Evaluation at University of Phoenix, explains how to leverage prior college credit and pursue that degree.
Not everyone follows a straight path from high school to a college degree, but a University of Phoenix survey found that 33% of working adults don't realize that their college coursework might still apply toward a degree. Completing a degree can open doors to career enhancement, and previous college credit could count toward a degree, with the potential to save both time and money. Start by documenting your learning, check colleges or universities to see if they have clear policies on transferring credit, and look for tools that might help you assess your program time and cost.
Check out the University of Phoenix mobile app, TransferPath, and download it for a free pre-evaluation of transfer credit.
Across the country, thousands of military families are facing a devastating hardship during the government shutdown. Before October 1st, one in four active duty families already struggled to afford groceries. Military Family Advisory Network CEO Shannon Razadin.
When the shutdown entered its second week, we started hearing from military families who were incredibly nervous about their paycheck and if they'd be able to put food on the table. That's why we launched MFAN's Emergency Grocery Support Program. Within the first 72 hours, more than 50,000 military families applied for grocery support.
MFAN is calling on Americans to join the response and to donate. You can visit combatmilitaryhunger.org.
We feel that no military family should have concerns around putting food on the table, and we know that so many Americans share that belief. Please join us by donating at combatmilitaryhunger.org, and we will make sure that the groceries are delivered to the military families who need it most.
Adopt US Kids for multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. Four, maybe five more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve. It's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, National Security Editor for Breitbart News. Joining us to talk about the Democrat shutdown and the health insurance issues and Obamacare issues underlying it is Lauren Stewart, Senior Legislative Affairs Liaison for Americans for Prosperity and Concerned Veterans for America. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Having me.
Well, great to have you aboard. I saw you have an op-ed that I think you and Mary Catherine Hamm co-wrote over at Fox News, where you're talking about the Obamacare situation, and you very eloquently made the point in several ways in this op-ed that Obamacare was really a fraud. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It was a scam that left the vast majority of Americans with worse health insurance, higher premiums, higher bills, and yet we're kind of enslaved to it now. And so the Democrats are using it as leverage and insisting that if they don't get everything they want in the shutdown drama, then Americans will lose their health care. And they're using that battle cry to rally the public to their side.
You are 100% right in terms of the Affordable Care Act or the not so Affordable Care Act. As we've seen, you know, in the last 15 years since the implementation of this, premiums across the board, whether you're an Affordable Care Act enrollee or just a regular private health insurer consumer, your premiums have gone up 75% in the last 15 years. So this is absolutely not an affordable health insurance system. Health insurance also, especially under the Affordable Care Act, does not equal health care. You know, we're seeing that Affordable Care Act networks across the country, as far as providers and doctors, are continuing to shrink. And if these boosted, more liberal than even President Obama could have thought of, Affordable Care Act subsidies that were put in place during COVID are extended, which is what the Democrats are holding the government hostage over, ACA enrollees would see up to $19,000 in out-of-pocket costs in addition to their premiums and have a third of their medical claims denied. So it really is a brilliant but highly false PR stunt that the Democrats are playing here, and a risky call on their part, especially of President Trump and House leadership, as well as Leader Thune in the Senate, to say, hey, we want this fraud-written, not affordable and really low quality health care program made permanent in order to reopen the government. It's doubling down on the worst, the most inflationary, and quite frankly, the most unfair aspects of the Affordable Care Act, which are that those who really need it, their insurance and their care is diluted by, in this case, families making over $130,000 a year. That's what we're looking at here.
That's just stunning. Chip Roy had a great line on this yesterday. Yes. He was paraphrasing what the Democrats were saying, and he said, "We screwed healthcare up, so give us $400 billion more to funnel to insurance companies, or we'll keep shutting down the government." And he said, "That's the best pitch," but it does seem like it's kind of working for the Democrats. It's working well enough for them to keep the shutdown going.
They have no other choice. You know, they cannot talk about any other issue, right, in their holster. They cannot talk about immigration. They cannot talk about the economy, all things at the crux of American life that under the Biden administration and Democratic leadership in Washington has become so much worse. Now, healthcare is also in that vein, but healthcare is something that Democrats have a really fine-tuned skill in gaslighting Americans and, quite frankly, gaslighting their fellow lawmakers and saying, you don't have a plan for this. The reason everything is so expensive is because of your policies, when in this instance, the boosted COVID subsidies that were meant to be temporary, not a single Republican had any part in creating them. Not a single Republican had any part in a vote to extend them, nor did any Republican have a vote for when they were going to expire. This is a fully owned, manufactured healthcare crisis that the Democrats have created. And everything's a crisis for them, right? They never want to let a good crisis go to waste. So there's a housing crisis, there's a healthcare crisis, everything's a crisis. But in terms of this, it's a crisis created by them continuing to double down on the consolidated move to shift power from American families and patients in their healthcare and drive it to insurers. It's a lot easier to control and to fund just a few large insurers in this company, in this country, right? There's not that many large insurance companies, but they make up the entire share. And quite frankly, the entire aspect of decision-making in terms of your family's health and mine, they say, you can go see this doctor. No, you can't. This is how much you have to pay, because the government has chosen under Democratic leadership and policy to empower them as such. What the President Trump is working to do and what Republicans passed through the One Big Beautiful Bill goes completely against that. Fraud protections on these federal health programs so that they can be refocused to the people that they're meant to serve. Additionally, expanding access to amazing tools like health savings accounts that put you in the driver's seat of your healthcare because you're controlling your healthcare dollars, you know, making telehealth permanent and also Uberizing healthcare for millions of Americans by increasing access to direct primary care. So Democrats are calling this bluff, and they might say they're winning and that every day gets better for them. I don't see that to be the case. And I see that they're calling the wrong bluff on this president and this Congress.
Well, I like to hope so, but, you know, as you just pointed out very nicely there, Obamacare is really basically a scheme to loot taxpayers and pump money into insurance companies, which is probably one of the least popular industries in America. I'm hard-pressed to think of one that people are less happy with in the insurance industry, and yet a very substantial amount of the American public is basically okay with this. And some Democrats, I'll quote one of them at you, Representative Hillary Scholten, of Michigan. She was on MSNBC last night, and she claimed 78% of the American people want the Affordable Care Act tax credits to be extended that were supposed to be temporary for the pandemic. So the Democrats think they have the wind at their sails here.
You know, polling has been such a fickle thing when it comes to these enhanced boosted subsidies. What a lot of the polling has been out there has been, do you want all of Obamacare to expire? And the way that they've been framing it has been such. They get to use massive enrollment numbers, things like 24 million enrollees are going to lose their health insurance. Well, 12 million of those folks didn't have a single medical claim last year. So what happens there? Well, those 12 million folks who didn't have a single medical claim do not receive their tax credit. The money flows from the United States Treasury straight into the insurance company's bank account for not providing any coverage or any care for these people that did not have medical claims. Now, you might say, well, they're young and healthy people, but you do go to the doctor once or twice a year. You do, you know, skin your knee. You do have a weird fever, something to that effect, where you do have one medical claim a year, and to the tune of it being over half of the enrollees in this program, it just shows how fraud-ridden it absolutely is. So, you know, Democrats have also said, you know, Senator Peter Welch of Vermont has said the Affordable Care Act is not affordable, but we need more of the Affordable Care Act to make it affordable. And that is just the actual definition of insanity, right? Repeating the same action and expecting a different result. So the polling on this, you know, Democrats are going to say 80% of Americans want it because they're framing the issue improperly and they're misleading Americans on this front. They're also, well, you know, like I said, misleading Americans on the fact that this is a Republican health crisis that not a single Republican voted for any aspect of. They could have made these boosted subsidies permanent when they were created through the American Rescue Plan, which, spoiler alert, did not rescue America, and could have made them permanent when they extended them through the Inflation Reduction Act, which, spoiler alert, did not help with inflation, and they didn't do it. This is not something Republicans need to own, and I really appreciate the leadership in D.C. on the Republican front and standing firm here.
Well, we're going to need more messaging. I mean, the answer to misleading is leading, and the Republicans really need to get in this game in a big way, rally around a message, and fight against the media messaging system that's been tearing them to pieces during the shutdown battle, and I hope they have the stomach for it, and I hope they have the organization for it. Lauren Stewart, Senior Legislative Affairs Liaison for Americans for Prosperity and Concerned Veterans for America. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Tonum Health, T-O-N-U-M, Tonum Health, and the product is Motus, M-O-T-U-S. It's a multiple ingredient formula that not only addresses GLP-1 with appetite and insulin sensitivity, but it also addresses fat oxidation and metabolism, addresses cellular energy with NAD levels. And so what we see is not only fat loss, quite frankly, exceeding that of these GLP-1 medications, where 87% of the weight that's lost is fat mass. That's a stark contrast to those medications. But we see numbers of weight loss as well that are pretty dramatic, 10.5% across the 6 months with the 100 study participants, and 14.5% weight loss with those that are doing excellent diet and exercise. Tonum.com, T-O-N-U-M, Tonum.com, and the product is MOTUS, M-O-T-U-S.
Small businesses face constant security challenges, from protecting property to keeping employees and customers safe. SimpliSafe is stepping in with a new suite of professional-grade security solutions designed specifically for business owners. TV host and entrepreneur Chip Wade has more.
As a business owner, I travel a lot for work, and it's reassuring to have a system that not only lets me monitor my businesses no matter where I am, but it's protected by trained agents who will intervene if there's trouble. It's about knowing my offices and workshops are protected even when I can't be there.
SimpliSafe Business Security offers customizable plans backed by 24/7 monitoring. Key features include AI-powered cameras, live agents who can help prevent crimes and call for help in an emergency, multi-camera live streaming, customized user access, and elevated customer support.
SimpliSafe aims to give business owners just like me peace of mind so they can focus on growing their businesses, all without long-term contracts or cancellation penalties.
To learn more, visit SimpliSafe.com.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon? Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. 2 weeks ago, the Senate held a hearing on the future of biotechnology, and a big focus of that hearing was how America can prevent China from stealing away the biotech industry, which it is in the middle of doing and doing a pretty good job of. Overall, according to the testimony, biotech has long been one of big American industries, but we are on the verge of losing that to China unless we make the right moves in response. Here with us to talk about it is Kenneth Raposa, industry analyst from the Coalition for a Prosperous America, former staff foreign correspondent for the Wall Street Journal, and a senior contributor to Forbes covering China since 2011. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Reading the summary of this Senate hearing is a tad dismaying because most of the professional testimony seem to say that China is taking over biotech and there's not much that they see on the horizon that we're doing to stop it.
Well, one of the reasons why is because big pharma in the Western world relies on China and is very happily partnering with China to do things like preclinical trials or experiments with new drugs. They have easier regulations than we have in the United States. So I will say this. Anytime China puts its mind to being a leader in an industry of which biotech is part of their five-year plans and has been for a while now, they tend to try to have a player from the early part of the supply chain, from the most boringest parts of a supply chain, to the top, which would be in the biotech world, would be a pharmaceutical drug, the Ozempic of the world, right? That's where they are. That's what they want to do, and they're heading in that direction. And the reason why is, of course, because China is famous for their industrial policy, but also because they've become the indispensable nation to Western pharma.
You know, this sounds to me exactly like what they did in the 1990s with critical minerals. They looked at where minerals were going, semiconductors, the rise of the computer age, and they made a strategic decision. They were going to dominate the supply chain for rare earths and critical minerals, and then they went out and did it. And again, as now, one of the big advantages was their regulatory environment. They simply don't let regulations or hassles or environmental groups or any of that get in their way if they decide they're going to do something, and Western nations simply can't compete.
Absolutely. That is exactly why. And so if you and I want to invest in a mine and we have someone telling us we can't dig over here because you have to protect this specific type of worm, and China doesn't have that problem, which of course they don't, whether you like the worm or not, that's where the money is going to go. And it's the same thing with preclinical trials. I mean, can you imagine the United States? I mean, we just went through COVID, for example. Even something like Operation Warp Speed, right? That was rare in the United States to put out a new drug that was not really tested on anyone in any meaningful way. China does this constantly. So in a weird way, the COVID era was almost like a China type way of doing pharma, where you just run trials really quickly and hope for the best. Speaking of COVID era, COVID vaccines, you have Richard Borla of Pfizer who will say to you about China that there is just no way that we can decouple from China. China is indispensable. And what they're doing now, and not just Pfizer, but all of the big Western pharma brands, is they license drugs now that are innovated and made in China, and they just slap their logo on it. So, this is one of the reasons why I would say that China made a deal with Trump to invest $70 billion in the United States, which is good, because by doing so, they'll be exempt from the potential of these high tariffs on branded drugs that Trump might be imposing on if this Section 232 investigation ever ends. So they'd be exempt from that. And one of the reasons why they want to be exempt from that is not just to avoid the obvious, to avoid the tariff, but is to make sure that their China licensed drugs would also be exempt from those tariffs.
And I usually do my best to push back against China's argument that their brand of authoritarian capitalism, which is really characteristically much more similar to fascism than anything else, is unbeatable. Because I've been hearing that story since the 1920s. That fascism is the wave of the future and nobody can compete with a managed economy where capital is harnessed to the will of the political party and so on. And one of the reasons is because they don't have regulatory hurdles and court cases. They can get things done. But on the other hand, I have to look at our regulatory environment and say, I don't see much chance it's going to get a whole lot thinner anytime soon. Some of our regulations are good. I mean, some of our safety and environmental regulations are clearly beneficial to the people and to the earth. But people in the Western world are very happy to subcontract all the dirty work to China as long as they don't have to look at it. Chinese strip mines look like the aftermath of an alien attack, and nobody in the environmental movement cares because it's not happening in their country.
Absolutely. And can you imagine this? Now imagine the scenario of your body being being strip mined. And I'm sure many people in China who are, I don't want to use the word guinea pigs, but who are part of these clinical trials, who knows? These are things that maybe would be unheard of in the United States. So, but again, how do you convince multinationals like a Pfizer, and I don't want to keep picking on them, but let's just say any company, AbbVie, how do you convince them not to use some of the big Chinese R&D shops to work on drugs or to see if this molecule works this way or not? You know, this is very important to them. China has become the key partner for any branded pharmaceutical company. And, you know, getting them to, you know, decouple from China will be very difficult on Capitol Hill. There will be massive lobbying pressure to make sure that the U.S. and China biotech is connected. And believe me, the Defense Department and so on, they've tried to ban this law called the Biosecure Act, this bill called the Biosecure Act, which is not a law, but it's still legislation, to make it so that companies that are doing business with the Department of Defense cannot use certain Chinese labs for R&D. And that and pharma came down on them and said, you know, this is too much. We can't have it happen. And the companies that they named, you know, companies that are regular partners with the United States, like WuXi AppTec, for example. So, you know, these guys are going to make sure that China is a player. And, you know, I don't really see how that changes otherwise, other than the United States in convincing these companies to create a similar ecosystem in the United States and make it at least as friendly to them as China without hurting the safety of, you know, testing for new drugs on patients.
Sure, but then we run into the problem of how doing that is going to have a great deal of cost attached to it. And since we're a free market democracy, we don't really just order companies to, you know, fall on their swords and eat up costs like that. China will order companies to do what the party says it should, and then they'll also throw state resources and subsidies behind them at a scale that we don't do. And we're increasingly seeing in industries like pharma, I think also in the artificial intelligence industry. A lot of this reminds me of the battle over AI. And I've been hearing AI experts for years saying China has some built-in advantages, very similar to the ones you're talking about with biotech, that are going to make it really hard to compete with them in the decade to come in a cost-effective way.
Yeah, it's very hard. China, I mean, you, John, you summed up everything that is the crux of the problem with China. It is a non-market economy. They don't play by the same rules as we do, and all along the supply chain and all along the economy, including on the regulatory side. So what do you have to do? Well, you have to figure out a way, and we do this with Biden tried this with industrial policies like the CHIPS Act, for example, to entice these multinationals to do what they would have done in Asia, and particularly China, in the United States, and figure out a way to make it so that it's profitable for them. Otherwise, these guys will be perfectly happy just setting up shop in China and doing all the stuff that they can possibly do in China. And we've seen it. You've seen it with AI. You see it with chips all across the landscape of chips, high-end chips to low-end, and, of course, with biotech.
Well, that is the rub. In a free market economy, in a democracy, in a place of personal liberty and the private ownership of capital, profit is the reason people do things. If there's no profit, they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And you got to make the city environment profitable for them. And in our case, the government can dump gigantic subsidies on you. And some of President Trump's plans involve that. He just signed a bunch of subsidized deals for critical minerals with a couple of companies. So we do have a lot of tax money to throw around, but it just isn't quite on the scale of what China will do. And it doesn't come with the waivers from regulatory hassles that China will give to its companies when it wants to take over an industry.
Absolutely not. You're right. And then again, let's not forget the labor issue. China is mostly concerned with, I say this all the time, is mostly concerned with full employment. You know, they are not concerned about making money for some companies, especially if it's a company that's important to a provincial government, right? Provincial leaders, they have a lot of say in China, sometimes more say than Xi Jinping himself. Xi Jinping might want to do one thing, but the provincial government has another idea because they have mouths to feed. And if those people are, you know, making, you know, working in a drug lab or whatever, and that's where their STEM students are going, and China has many of them, that's fine. And if the company makes no money, it doesn't matter. So these are also things that these are not realities in the United States. You're not making money, you're filing for bankruptcy, and you're dead, and that's just not the case there. So you're competing with a lot of moving parts that are really hard to hit. when it comes to China. And, you know, you need these companies in this like biotech. It's a tough one to decouple from.
And you've touched on another problem there. For China, the educational system is results-oriented. They want people that have capabilities and skills, and they want them to be able to produce. In the United States, higher education has become a ridiculous overpriced scam, and most of what it does is crank out degrees for the children of politically privileged families. But our students are not coming out able to compete in these high-tech fields. Hell, we're importing people in STEM fields and working for these industries. So, man, it's just not a very encouraging analysis that we have here. Kenneth Raposa, industry analyst for the Coalition for a Prosperous America. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Would you know where to turn if you or loved one suddenly became paralyzed? Paralysis isn't something you plan for, but the National Paralysis Resource Center has served as a vital lifeline for thousands of families. But federal funding for the program is at risk. Marine veteran Sherman Gillums Jr., Senior Director of Public Policy at the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation, says the consequences could be devastating.
This is about more than just a budget line. It's about veterans, caregivers, and families, real people who need these resources to live more productive and independent lives.
Gillums, who lives with paralysis himself, says cutting this funding would remove critical resources like peer mentoring, help with housing, and job placement guidance.
When you take away these lifelines, people must figure out how to rebuild their lives on their own. And that's not something any family should have to do.
Learn about the importance of funding for the National Paralysis Resource Center at ChristopherReeve.org.
On Sunday, November 2nd, Americans will fall back to standard time, despite growing concerns over the health and safety risks of seasonal time changes. According to sleep experts, making standard time permanent could improve the lives of millions, and the Coalition for Permanent Standard Time and its partner, the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, are working to make that a reality. Dr. Karen Johnson, sleep medicine physician and co-chair of the Coalition for Permanent Standard Time.
When our schedules align with the timing of natural light, people benefit from brighter mornings, safer commutes to work and school, and improved sleep at night.
Want to lessen the effects of the time change? Try these tips. Get at least 7 hours of sleep per night before and after the change. Adjust the timing of daily routines like meals and exercise, and head out for early morning sunlight during the week after the time change. For more information about ending daylight saving time and to find additional resources about sleep disorders, treatments, and sleep health, visit sleepeducation.org, sponsored by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking, but no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times? When we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while. Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. We're talking with Kenneth Raposa, industry analyst from the Coalition for a Prosperous America. I asked Ken if he could stay over because I threw kind of a loaded topic out there. We were just talking a minute ago. The intersection between China's dominance of industries like biotechnology and other high technology industries and America's declining education system, which is really a big problem here. We have the most expensive education in the world, and yet we're told we need endless H-1B visas to hire foreigners to come in and do the jobs that Americans won't do. Where did all that money go, and why exactly are we falling behind in industries that we essentially created? So Kenneth, is there a way that we can fix this without radically and quickly reforming higher education?
Man, that is a really tough question. I would say that I would say no off the top of my head, right? You don't, because I joke around about the movie Interstellar, and there's a scene in Interstellar where they talk about how there is, and you know that movie, that's Michael McConaughey movies, right? The planet is dying. There's some sort of climate catastrophe, and only people who are studying STEM can go to college. Only the STEM students are in college. There's no, you're not going for musical theater. You're not going to study philosophy or creative writing. You're just going there for STEM because we're in a crisis. And so that I like that Interstellar approach. I'm being facetious, of course. That's never going to happen. But we don't have that in the United States where people are, you know, they want to, you know, get into engineering, right? Or become a doctor, for example. That's very Asian, right? I hate to stereotype it, but that's what you look at the Indian students that come here or Chinese students that come here. They're all in that field. I mean, a few of them, of course, go to Berklee College of Music in Massachusetts, where I'm from, a lot of Asians. But in the STEM field, whether they're Americans who are in Indian or Chinese Americans or Asians, they tend to flock towards that economic interest, I mean, that educational interest. And it, because in those countries especially, that's the main focus. Now, what's happened with China, because you mentioned H-1Bs, a lot of the Chinese since COVID have not been coming here. And so they've been really flooding Chinese schools, their home schools, with science and chemical engineers. And a lot of these guys are getting PhDs, and, you know, they're expanding the lab. So labs is hiring in China. There's a huge group of, you know, there's a huge base of labor with the skills to, you know, work in a lab in China, you know, and it's a different system there. In the United States, we have in a lab, the head guy is more managerial, right? There's a sort of a it's more of a management system. You don't really have a whole bunch of people working in the lab, right? You might have a few, but it's more of a top management stuff, a lot of meetings, and a few guys working in a lab. Whereas in China, it's a little different. You have a few less management and more guys working in a lab, a lot of PhDs working in a lab. So if you were to compare it to something like the TV show Big Bang Theory back in the day, you'd have a lot of Sheldon Coopers, right, working on a project and just – one or two managers. Here it's different. You got a few managers and less lab guys. And why is that? Because a lot of the stuff is done in China.
Right, and the bureaucratic infestation of American industry, which I think is a consequence of the education system also. I think one of the reasons why everything in America became so bureaucratized and companies increasingly resemble government organizations in the amount of fat that they have in their structure, in the amount of useless people, and in their tendency to get involved in politics, is because a whole generation that was educated that way was then unleashed into corporate America. And that's one of the reasons why American companies are becoming indulgent, lazy, incapable, and more interested in politics and in doing whatever they're supposed to be doing. We really need to focus and start producing things.
Right. In that case, you're talking about a education system that's more focused on the humanities, right? And some of us might say, well, in the classical liberal sense, it's nice to know philosophy, it's nice to know history and so on, but that's not really the humanities that we see people coming out of school with, right? It's these really left of center or far left center educations, right? Degrees, gender studies,
social activism,
international, all kind of social activist related studies, and so that's very different from what we might have thought of 20 years ago, where a liberal arts degree or humanities degree was someone who came out with a history major or something like that. And now it might be, if you're a history major, it would be history for some oppressed group that you were focused on, and only that. And so, and of course, they're in the HR departments and they're in corporate boardrooms now. And so it's really flooded into the faculty lounge has really seeped into not only corporations, but of course, government, and has for some time now.
If I remember the beginning of Interstellar correctly, the conflict for Matthew McConaughey's character is he couldn't get his daughter into a good school because she wanted to study astronomy. And they had decided that wasn't useful because they were entirely focused on STEM and on industries that could help the Earth survive this crisis it was going through. And of course, the irony of the movie is that in the end, astronomy and being astronauts is all that really mattered to the salvation of the world. And there could be a lesson in there about how you want to have vision. You want to have people educated big enough to think big and dream big. And we don't want to lose that. But we have gone too far astray from teaching people useful skills and bringing them out of schools in a way that they're eager to get into their careers and start producing, which I think is another advantage that countries like China have. And when you look at the way different student bodies perform in the United States, the infamous ability of Asian students to buckle down and come out with something useful and dive right into work versus American kids that still don't know what they want to do when they're 3 years into a four-year degree.
Right. Yeah, it's a totally different culture. And of course, not to say that everything in China is great. They're kicking out butts in every which way. That's not entirely true, right? Of course, China's still a very poor country. There's a lot of kids who went to college, got a PhD, and they're not working. They are doing gig work. So that exists there too. Of course, they might not have a PhD or a master's degree in gender studies, but they have it in engineering and they're delivering food. So that exists in China as well. So it's not perfect, but again, to look at the overall culture of STEM and people who are going to get into the sciences and the hard sciences, that is China excels at that, and we do not.
I think back to the union movement at its heyday back in the 70s, and they would run commercials saying, sure, union labor costs more, but we deliver better product. You're getting quality when you hire unionized labor. That was their big sales pitch, and they later gave up on that and just started playing power politics games. But that's kind of what we have to do. If we're going to be competitive in this world to come, we have to say, sure, maybe American labor costs a little bit more, and we have more regulations, but it's worth it. Our regulations guarantee safety and quality, and we still have the innovation to outdo a staid communist system and dream big about the future. I think we have unique advantages that we can leverage if we have the vision to do it. I'll give you the last word.
I think you're right on that, but it's going to take a generation, to really change the mindset in the United States, opposed to government that thinks, we can compete with China, but we can do it the old-fashioned way. And China's a different animal now. They're not making Happy Meal toys and, Christmas lights anymore. It's a behemoth.
And here at the end of the first quarter of the 21st century, a generation is a long time. Kenneth Raposa, industry analyst for the Coalition for a Prosperous America. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. Thanks for joining us on this hour of the Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.